Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fam. My name is Alec Medford. His name is Blake Elliott. We got Chris Strong in the ones and twos for you. The Turn It On, Leave It On listener, we appreciate you being and doing just that here on your home of America's team and the Texas Rangers. It is 105.3 The Fan. Coming up on the other side, we will have Carter Freeman on to talk all things college football before we crosstalk with the G-Bag Nation and get on out of here for the day. But right now, we go out to the D&M Leasing Hotline, where we welcome in every Thursday at 1 o'clock, even if Corey Majors isn't here. It's Kyle Yeomans of DallasCowboys.com. Kyle, how's it going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone. Yeah, thanks for helping continue the tradition of the 1 o'clock every Thursday mindset. I love hopping on with you guys, the Tolos out there as well, and excited to wrap up the season in a big way. But then we've got draft coverage around the corner, and I know there's a lot of fan representation on the Cowboys side of things this upcoming draft season. So lots to look forward to still.
Very much so, and I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. In the last segment, we did Cowboys New Year's resolutions for the 2025 season. If there was one that you could give to them and you know that it would magically come true, what would that be? And for a bit of a preface here, I said just commit to the running game, since it seems like they found it out. Keep Rico Dowdle, draft yourself another back in the maybe the mid rounds, and call it a day with the running game. What would be yours?
So I'm a big believer that winning football games, whether it be at a lower level or at the NFL level, it all starts in the trenches. So if I were to say one New Year's resolution, wave a magic wand and poof, it appears, I would want the Cowboys to dominate the trenches, dominate the line of scrimmage. And that way it goes both ways. That way you can dominate up front with the offensive line and then have success with the defensive line and what they bring from a front seven standpoint. So dominate the trenches, continue to set the standard at the line of scrimmage, and then let the guys outside of that eat, because I believe it starts up front. You've got playmakers on offense with guys like Dowdle and Lamb and Ferguson and whoever they choose to bring back next year. And then on the opposite side, you've got Diggs and Bland, and you've got some high-level draft picks out there too. But I want the defense and the offensive lines to be better than they were this year, whether that be because of injury or whatever it may be. So if you dominate the trenches, I think there's a lot of games you're going
to
win.
Kyle, I hate to be negative on one of the first times we're going to speak to each other, but I feel like you're the perfect person to ask. Has been watching all the games in depth, so you'll have a great answer to this. Who in your eyes has been the Cowboys player that maybe has let you down this season the most, maybe in a nicer way, the most disappointing? I have mine in mind. I'll see if it's a similar answer.
I'm trying to think. So most disappointing, I'm like going through the depth chart in my head. Because, I mean, there's a couple guys that didn't have great years, whether it be because of injury or whatnot. I think Zach Martin's up there. I mean, just because of what he had done previously and the immovable object that he was. But I don't put all that on Zach either. So I don't think that would be my number one answer. Who's your answer? Who are you thinking of?
Mine is the tight end that we thought would take that Pro Bowl, All-Pro jump, and Jake Ferguson, especially with all the injuries to the receiver room. He was supposed to be your second guy, and to me, he just didn't take that jump. I know he did have the injury, he missed a game or two, but to me, Jake, I just really had high expectations for him.
Yeah, he didn't take the jump that we anticipated, no doubt. Again, it goes back to the fact that he's missed three games, one early in the year because of the lower body injury that he had in the opener against Cleveland.
Yep.
And then the second time was the two games he missed because of a concussion. He's had three games of over 70 yards receiving. And even with that being said, he's the only Cowboys tight end to have a game over 70 yards receiving this year. So I don't put a ton of that on Ferguson either. I think that the offensive mishaps have come, whether it be on the offensive line or with Cooper Rush as well, instead of Dak Prescott, because Ferguson has the connection with Dak. He doesn't necessarily have the connection with Cooper Rush. Mm-hmm. And we saw that at times through the year when Rush was throwing the ball around. He was looking at Schoemaker. He wasn't necessarily looking at Ferguson. So he's on the list. It's tough for me to pinpoint one specific person because, like I said in the previous question, this is a game where you win it in the trenches. And if I had to point out a unit that would be disappointing, I would say it's the defensive line. You want to just take steps in the right direction with Mazi Smith. He's taken steps in the right direction, but is he playing like the first-round pick that he anticipated? Probably not. You had guys banged up at the edge rusher spot all year long. So I think as a collective unit, I was expecting more out of the defensive front than I was out of any individual that just didn't live up to that expectation.
Kyle Yeomans, DallasCowboys.com on the D&M Leasing Hotline here on the KNC Masterpiece. You've got one more game left of the season. It is against the Commanders, who have locked themselves into the playoffs, which feels weird to say in 2025. But nonetheless, that is the situation. The Cowboys have nothing to play for here. Is there anything that you're looking for? Are you hoping for a Trey Lance appearance? Are you looking at a specific position group to improve or maybe to look at a specific name? Is there anything you're actually looking for?
Yeah, I think on the offensive side, you're going to see a lot of that because, of course, your entire coaching staff remains in limbo. You're a lot of your roster. I mean, you have 26 undrafted or unrestricted free agents going into this offseason. There's a lot of guys in limbo, but I want to know about the guys that are going to be here in the future or have a shot to be here in the future. So Trey Lance is certainly the popular name there. I put out an article on DallasCowboys.com early in the week. It's called High Five, and it lists the five guys I have under the microscope going into this matchup. Trey Lance is obviously number one, but I want to see out of Deuce Vaughn. What do you have? You've had 2 years of him sitting on the bench, not utilized. It's been up until, I believe it was like September of last year, the exact stats in the article, but September of last year since he's had a game of more than four carries at all. And I want to see what they can do to make him a playmaker on this offense. I want to see Jonathan Mingo. You spent a fourth-round pick on Jonathan Mingo as well. If he's expected to be under contract these next couple years in Dallas, then what are you getting out of him? What are you going to get? And he's had targets, hasn't had receptions. 14 targets, just three receptions with 22 yards to show for it. So I want to see more Jonathan Mingo. More of these guys up front on the offensive line, Tyler Guyton, Cooper Beebe, TJ Bass up there too. That's what I want to see is the offensive side. What is going to be here in the future? What can you build around? What can you have confidence in? Because there's guys that you either know the answer to already, like Cooper Rush, or guys that you have confidence in to figure it out, like the tight end room. I just don't have that with the whole offense. I think this is an opportunity to see that. At least the last live rep you're going to see up until the preseason of next year.
Yeah, I'd love to see some Trey Lance. The fact that he only got in with 2 minutes left in that Eagles game, when that game was decided in the second half quite early, was just astonishing to me. But there was actually some good football played over the last day or two. We had Texas taking on Arizona State. What were your thoughts from yesterday's games and the college football playoffs and how it's kind of playing out? And Cam Scataboo, is that the future Cowboys running back?
Dude, Cam Scataboo's a dude. I mean, he is just tough as nails. That was when you said, what are your thoughts on the college football playoff? It's just Scataboo and what he was able to do. Single-handedly almost beat one of the best teams in the country in what he was able to carry yesterday. So certainly impressive, and I think NFL draft teams are looking at that as well. Is he a full-fledged draft prospect? It's going to be hard to kind of throw a value on that just because he was so under the radar to start and the physical attributes aren't necessarily jumping off the page. If he tests well, I think he could maybe raise his stock, but it's going to take something like that to get there. The other side of it is the fact that all three teams that received the first round bye that have played so far have all lost. Is it really an advantage to have that extra week of preparation? Of course, on paper it is, but you saw Ohio State boat race Oregon last night. I thought that was uber impressive, but an Ohio State team that took on Tennessee the week before that had already seen Oregon, they didn't need an extra week of prep. And I felt like it showed. I felt like Ohio State jumped out on top because they were the more prepared and more fresh team at that point going in, or at least more warm team going into it. Same can be said for Boise State. I know they were technically the underdogs against Penn State, Big Ten versus Mountain West. That plays a factor, but Penn State came out, jumped out early, and took advantage there. And then last night against Arizona State and Texas, Arizona State got off to the slow start. Texas jumped out in front, and if it wasn't for that early start from the Longhorns, you would see the Sun Devils moving on to face Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. So I think there's something to that, the fact that it's happened all three times. We'll see what Notre Dame does this afternoon against Georgia. If Notre Dame jumps out on top early, then maybe it is a conversation of, oh, maybe this first-round bye isn't what it's cracked up to be, especially when there's such an emphasis on the conference championship side of things.
Kyle, was it targeting or was it not?
Well, I mean, that's tough. When you've got slow-mo replay and professionals that know the rule book inside and out decide that it's not targeting, then I tend to lean on the side of the guys that know what they're talking about and saying that it's not targeting. I also thought in real time, I did not think he led with the crown of his helmet. I thought he led with the face mask. It was maybe a little closer than I initially anticipated, but in a call like that, I would rather them take the targeting away, wipe the flag off the field and move on and not have that big of an impact. I know there are some Arizona State fans that are and non-Texas fans that are going to clamor that's targeting. It's the rule book. Obviously, it's not the definition of targeting if it wasn't called targeting. So I lean on the side of no, but either way, I could see where the thought process was.
Kyle, another incredible season of work from you and the crew. We appreciate the time all throughout this season, and we will talk soon, my friend.
Well, did you guys think it was targeting? I'm curious on your side of things.
Ooh. I mean, I don't think I have enough time to get into what I think. I'm known as a Texas hater, and the text line has not been happy with me today. But just as a football fan, I understand why they didn't call that in that moment, because they don't want that to potentially decide the game. Me personally, I don't know what targeting is anymore. if you said the rule book is empty, targeting just exists. There's no parameters for it. I'm going to tell you that's targeting. But like you said, with all the different definitions that they have for launching with the feet, leading with the crown of the helmet, I understand why they didn't call it there.
Yeah, it's tough to see. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. We'll talk soon.
There he goes, Kyle Yeomans on the D&M Leasing Hotline here on 105.3 The Fan. Before we get out of here, we were doing our DFW Sports resolutions during the Expressway, and one Chris Strong said that he has an interesting one that I want to hear about before we get on out of here.
Yeah, this is a singular baseball nugget for y'all before the break.
I love nuggets.
I'm going to tell you why Spicy. Marcus Semien is bound for an MVP-level year in 2025.
Ooh.
Now, everyone knows that Bruce Bochy has an every other year sort of thing going on with the Giants, and that could be a good reason for the Rangers succeeding in 2025. But what if I told you Marcus Semien has the same thing going on statistically? In 2019, back when he was with Oakland, his WAR was 8.5, wins above replacement 8.5, led the league, and he finished third in MVP voting that year, third. Remember that.
Yep.
Next year, COVID year, shortened year, 0.4 WAR, doesn't really count COVID year.
No.
2021 goes to Toronto for a year, another MVP level year. And where did he finish in MVP voting? Third, again. 2022, his first year with the Rangers, he had the rough start, if y'all remember. Rough start to the season. He still finished with a 5.5 WAR, but it wasn't MVP level voting whatsoever. He got no MVP votes in 2022. Another odd year, 2023, 7.4 WAR, and he finished where in MVP voting that year?
Third. Yep.
2024, backs it up a little, 4.1 WAR. He did struggle last year.
Yep.
He finished with under a 700 OPS, which I don't think any of us were expecting.
Nope.
2025, will he finish third in MVP voting?
He'll finish first.
Ooh.
Yeah, maybe he breaks that curse now and he actually wins the thing. That would be amazing. No, because I remember that was the conversation, that similar thought process whenever he first got here and he had that slow start that you mentioned. Everyone was like, he does this like every other year.
Yeah.
You need to let him build up his timing, his rhythm, and he just needs to feel it again. And as soon as he did, he was tearing the cover off the baseball and he was getting on base at a wicked percentage, which as a leadoff hitter is amazing. So I think you're on to something.
Wait,
there, Chris Strong.
Should Semien keep leading off for this? I've seen some people on the tweets and the grams saying they should switch up the lineup. Do you think Semien should keep leading off, you two seam heads?
I've seen Jared Sandler advocate as well for him not to lead off, which is surprising to me. I mean, you're paying the guy millions upon millions. I think he should still be the leadoff hitter.
Typically, when people like Jared, who are way smarter than I will ever be, he's forgotten more baseball than I will ever remember.
Mm-hmm.
I just tend to digress to them, but I mean, Boach even said he told us here on this show in one of his last interviews of the season, he was like, I'm going to have to talk to Marcus about that. Mm. You know, just entertain the idea. You know, they might not actually do it, but they are thinking about it. And I think it's a valid conversation. And I think if I'm writing the lineup card for opening day, I probably move him out of the leadoff spot. Mm. I'm not burying him at the bottom of the lineup or anything, but I think I move him down a few spots just to start the season. And then if he goes nuclear again, like Chris is saying he's going to, and I fully believe it, I'm buying in. So if it doesn't happen, it's your fault, Chris. But if that happens, then you can totally move him back up.
Who's your leadoff guy? Wyatt?
Probably.
Damn. Josh Smith? No?
Josh Smith
is one hell of a leadoff hitter, too. I mean, hey, with the moves CY is making, if he's still on this team by then, you know, who knows at this point? At this rate, he's a madman. He gets no sleep. So great point there. And now I just got that much more excited for the Rangers season. Coming up next here on 105.3 The Fan, how about we get into more college football since Kyle picked our brains about it? How about we pick the brain of Carter Freeman, our video extraordinaire and college football nerd in the best way, next on The Fan. Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, my name is Alec Medford. His name is Blake Elliott of The Fan After Dark. We got Chris Strong on the ones and twos. For you, we will crosstalk with the G-Bag Nation coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. So stick around for that to see what they have coming up for you in your DFW Sports afternoon. But right now, we teased it a little bit with Kyle Yeomans, and we are going to go back to the world of college football and talk all things college football playoff as Carter Freeman joins us here in studio, as he has been doing lovely work on the 105 Through the Fan website all college football season long, getting you all the updates and storylines you need to know. And now we're down to the nitty-gritty of it. And I'll let you pick where we start, because there's a few different things I do want to hit. I do want to talk a little bit about Boise State because they impressed me. I do want to talk about, obviously, the Texas game because I want to deflect some of the heat that I've gotten from the fan text to you selfishly because I know that I got to do this again tomorrow. And, of course, the blowout that was Ohio State-Oregon. Where do you want to start?
Well, we haven't really talked a whole lot about Penn State and Boise State, have we?
No, not at all.
It was a close game. I think it vindicated the idea of one of the group of five teams making the playoff because that was a 3-point game in the third quarter. It ended up being a bigger margin of victory for Penn State because of a long touchdown run at the very end. Like, I think the box score is a little misleading. Boise State played Penn State hard that entire game. So I think the idea of the best group of five team deserving a spot is here to stay. Now, the seeding of things, that's where things might change going forward. I think it could change even as soon as next year, where you see the champions of the leagues not get an automatic bye. You would see maybe a Penn State or a Texas get the bye, and then they would play these teams either at home or it would still be in a bowl scenario, whatever you may have it. I just don't think you're going to see Arizona State and Boise State end up as 3 and 4 seeds. Whether they deserve it or not, you know, that's up to you to decide this year. But I don't think we'll see that going forward. But Boise State, yeah, they gave a hell of a fight.
Played better than SMU?
Yes, they did.
Which is
amazing. They did. And yeah, from one horse team to another. You know, they just, Penn State just keep playing horse teams. They'll just keep beating them.
And Ginty was, a lot was made of how he was going to play against a school like a Penn State. A lot of people were ridiculing his first half performance, not having the monster numbers, having the fumble. But the numbers have come out. Shout out to Nick Harris letting us know some of these numbers. 16 missed tackles and 75 rushing yards after contact for Ginty. Did he still impress you, Carter, showing that he can run with the big boys? Or do you think we should temper expectations on what he's going to be at the next level?
No tempering expectations. I know they talked about it this morning with on Sean and RJ that like this is his 14th game. Like there's going to be some natural amount of, you know, tiredness or, you know, fatigue that you're feeling after playing this long and touching the ball 600 million times in a given season. Yeah. So I'm still super high on him. There was a point in the fourth quarter, Boise State trying to come back. It was a 3rd and 23. And I'm just like, this is, you know, Boise State's going to have to punt again. They're totally cooked. And Ginty picked it up like it was nothing.
Yeah.
Probably 3 or 4 of those 16 broken tackles that he had came on that one play. So I'm still high on him. It's just, yeah, Penn State, they've looked really impressive through these two games. Ohio State is a team we're talking about looking unbeatable. Penn State's looked great too, but they have had an easier path.
And I know the OU fan in you has thoughts about the Texas game yesterday, but the college football fan in all of us has to say that was probably one of the best games we've seen all season. Super competitive to the end of the game. My take on the whole thing, we'll get to the whole targeting thing here in a second, but for me, I said from the second half up until the fourth down touchdown to Matthew Golden, Arizona State deserved to win that game. But they lost that right to deserve to win, in my mind, when they sent a zero blitz on fourth and forever against a quarterback who has been there, done that, which, you know, I lit up the fan text by saying, I don't think Quinn Ewers is great, but the reason, you said this a couple weeks ago, the reason that he's starting over an Arch Manning who is probably more talented, probably a better athlete, is because he's been there, done that. He's smart enough to check out of those plays. He saw cover zero, which they didn't try to disguise whatsoever, which I thought was gross. And he checks into a cover zero beater. So do you think that line of thinking is not totally off base? Do you think I'm crazy for thinking that Arizona State deserved to win that game until that one play?
They played like the better team for the second half. There's no question about that. Texas 100% played down to their competition. And I was on with 1080 KRLD on Tuesday, and I said the only way Texas loses this game is if Quinn Ewers plays down to his competition.
Yeah.
And I don't think he played down to the competition so much as the rest of the team did.
Sure.
For a lot of that, there were a lot of penalties for Texas, especially towards the end of the game.
Kelvin Banks with a false start with the game on the line.
A lot of false starts, a lot of pass interferences late there. So just the whole Texas team seemed disjointed after they were off to a flying start. They're up 14-0 like 3 seconds into the game as soon as they touch the ball, and then they score 7 points in the second half. Like, it's something that frustrates me with Sark. I feel like he gets in his own way with his play calling. Yep. And I thought this towards the end of the game when Texas is driving for the first missed field goal that Burt Auburn had, is there's a, like, 2 minutes left or whatever. Arizona State has maybe one timeout at this, maybe two. Sark's throwing the ball, and they're very low percentage throws that he's having Ewers make that are incompletions. They stop the clock.
I think that second was an RPO where he could have handed it off and he pulled it. Wasn't a smart
throw. Yeah, and so they got bailed out because Arizona State, you know, ended up not being able to score there, and then Texas got to drive right back down the field and then miss another field goal. But yeah, there are things where Texas on the team got in the way of themselves, but I was thinking in overtime, I was like, if Texas loses this game, it's not Quinn Ewers' fault. I never felt that the interception he had was awful, extremely stupid decision, but you saw in overtime, they scored on 3 consecutive plays to end that game.
Yeah.
It was the touchdown to Golden, the touchdown to Gunnar Helm, and then the 2-point. Yeah. Like, those are throws that a guy like Quinn Ewers can make.
When you saw that initial play, 4th and 12 or 4th and 13, I think it was, you get Kelvin Banks injury, false start, and they're at 4th and 13, what was going through your head? Because I know watching the game, I was like, this game is over. Texas, I think, is a better team. They play down to their competition. Arizona State has played better in second half and overtime. There's no way they're winning this game right here. And then obviously the throw to Matthew Golden on the great route by him. Just kind of take us through what was going through your head, and then after that play happened.
I was with Alec where I thought that was the stupidest possible thing they could have done. It was, they needed 13 yards, and they had done a good job of containing. It was 4th and 8 or yeah. third and eight, whatever, before they hadn't let Texas move the ball in the previous two plays. So you're having success without the need to blitz, without the need to send like 20 people that all get blocked by probably the best offensive line in the freaking playoff. I thought that was a really stupid call. And then as soon as Ewers throws the ball, you're like, there's somebody wide open in the end zone. Lo and behold, it's Golden.
Oh, I was screaming, open, he's open.
Yeah, so I messaged my friends as soon as that happened. I said, that was the worst blitz I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
And just for it to... for that decision to then result in a touchdown on the very next play for Texas, then the 2-point, and then for the interception to happen.
I mean, they were barely out of the commercial with the Gunner Helm touchdown. They're like,
yeah, show the beginning of it. No, yeah.
I thought it was a replay of something I missed because, to your point, it happened so quick. And I was like, that was the moment where I was like, yep, that's Texas. Like, they're back to form. And now we got to bring this up. And I'm going to present both to you because the Texas fans are very vociferous about call it both ways.
Oh, great
here.
Word.
What was it targeting on, obviously, on the Texas play, on the Arizona State run up the middle at the end of the game? And then, of course, just to keep things fair, the pass downfield by Quinn Ewers where his guy gets leveled over the in
Isaiah
between
Bond.
The hashes. Yeah, Isaiah Bond, who was a blank in the box score. Just want to mention that, too. Was either of those targeting because neither of them were called?
I think the Michael Taft hit on the Arizona State receiver in real time, I thought it was targeting. Watching it again, I see why they didn't call it because there was no launch, because there was no, you know, violent intent. It didn't look like, but it did look like to me unnecessary roughness on a defenseless receiver.
Sure.
So I thought if not targeting, there still should have been some foul called with it. And you could say the same thing on the, because that was the interception throw, right?
Yes.
Yep. Where the, yeah, two Arizona State defensive backs and one of them leveled Bond.
I mean, leveled him.
Yeah. If you wanted a launch towards the head and neck area, that was a launch. So yeah, you know, a lot of people are saying in these late game scenarios, you can't throw the flag. I think if it's a foul, you should throw the flag whenever. Like, it doesn't matter the situation. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. But yeah, I guess I like that they didn't call either of them as opposed to one of them getting called and the other one not getting called.
It would be a lot different of a conversation if that was the case. And there was a situation, it wasn't like a defenseless receiver targeting thing, but in the last Cowboys game when I was driving around and I got to see the replay once I got parked in the parking lot, I heard Babe Loffenberg talking about it. And on the interception throw, this is where I kind of have the same issue, and that's why I'm okay with them not throwing the flag there, is Babe was saying, you know, they don't really define it very well, but the defender is entitled to make a play and entitled to their space on the field. But there's no actual jurisdiction of that. There's no verbiage that says what that is, what that means. So there was a launch, but obviously if they throw the flag, the defender is going to get up and say, I was trying to make a play on the ball. You know, that's going to be his argument 9 times out of 10. So that's why I'm okay with them not throwing the penalty flag there. But we didn't spend much time on this game because it wasn't much of a game. Oregon, Ohio State.
Oof.
You said it again. I'm giving you all the props here. You said it last week and even on Tuesday with Will and Mike that Ohio State looks like the team that we thought they were supposed to be all year. And something I brought up at the beginning of the show is that they got a receiver on their team that would be wide receiver one in this draft, in the next draft, but in his own draft might not even be wide receiver one because of a 17-year-old playing football at the University of Alabama. So what did you take away from that game other than Ohio State is a very well-oiled machine?
Well, I thank you for pointing out me saying the good things about Ohio State and you not mentioning that I picked Oregon to win this game.
See, I was trying to avoid that, but you said it not me.
I do appreciate that.
You said it not me.
How disappointing is that, Carter?
Just Oregon in general.
I mean, undefeated.
You know, in the
number one seed and just getting boat raced.
In the pre-BCS era, they would just be national champions because they went undefeated in the regular season. If it was a 4-team college football playoff, they might have won the whole thing. But with this new scenario that we have where you get 12 teams, teams that are flawed, that lost early, but are still really good teams, you allow them in the tournament, you allow them to get hot at the right time. This Ohio State team is playing like LSU in 2019. Alabama in 2020, Ohio State in 2014, the first year of the college football playoff when they won the whole damn thing. Mm-hmm. So it was that Oregon team that we saw was just not the same team that we saw the whole year. They looked like they played scared. Dude. They weren't taking shots, and you lose Evan Stewart in pregame warmups, and you lose Jordan James, your best running back. I guess Oregon's only good running back, because you know how many yards they finished rushing? Negative 26. Every other play for Ohio State was a tackle for loss. Jeez. Or a set. You know, that's what it felt like.
And yeah,
that's
not good.
That is how hair on fire Ohio State played, and that's going to be quite the game at the Cotton Bowl next Friday. Texas versus Ohio State. That
can't
is
wait.
As fun of a matchup as I think we could get. Which I said Oregon Ohio State would be a de facto national championship game because those were 1 and 2 in the polls for most of the year. They looked like the two best teams. They already played a really close game, but
13 TFLs. That's crazy.
Yeah, it just nuts. So I still think Ohio State is the team to beat, and yeah, Texas is going to have their hands full with that because if Texas plays anything like they played against Arizona State, they're going to lose by double digits to Ohio State. If assuming Ohio State plays the way they're playing, but it's a Ryan Day Ohio State team, so I guess they could just fall apart and lose to Michigan like they did earlier this year. You never know.
I feel like I heard the answer a little bit there. Ohio State, as of today, is your pick to win it all?
Yeah, at this point, I don't see how I could pick against them. Yeah, like Penn State's looked really good against lesser competition, but you know, the first 2 weeks of the college football playoff, we said the Ohio State game, whichever one they're playing in, that's going to be a really good game. Mm-hmm. Them against Tennessee, them against Oregon. Sure. They beat the brakes off both of them.
Yeah.
Well, Carter, we always appreciate the time here on the KNC Masterpiece. I'm sure we're going to talk again soon. But you can find all of his fine work on 1053thefan.com, C3 1053 on socials as well. He posts great updates there too and does all the great video work that you are hopefully watching right now as we speak. Thanks, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
There he goes, the radio superstar now, making all kinds of radio hits and whatnot across the dial right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, how about we chit-chat with those fellows from the G-Bag Nation, find out what they got coming up here on a Thursday right here on The Fan. One final time here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. My name is Alec Medford, and on loan from The Fan After Dark, he is Blake Elliott. I survived another show with this man. I need to pat myself on the back. It's been a while. I was scared.
You got an under the weather, Blake, so you didn't get the full storm.
Yeah, it was probably a blessing in disguise. But
tyrant.
Now I remembered that you parked next to me, and I'm going to have to figure out how to get out of there because you took up 2.5 spaces.
Yep,
so that's fun.
Jam my eyes closed.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks to Chris Strong on the ones and twos. Did an excellent job here today. But now we crosstalk with the G-Bag Nation presented by D&M Leasing. Fellas, how we doing today?
Terrific. How are you?
Doing amazing, and even more so after I saw how easily rattled the Texas Longhorns fan base is, because I've had a target on my back for pretty much the entire show. We opened up the show right out of the gates about the targeting discussion, and look, dunk on me all you want. I know it's deserved. Born and raised TCU fan, so I just had like a natural hate for UT. So the fact that they could have absolutely kicked that one down the road and lost that game was hysterical to me, but that was still one of the best games that I've seen all year.
Did the color of your own hair never almost persuade you into becoming a Longhorns fan?
You know, there was a couple of times where I had to question that. You know, you got to wake up and look in the mirror every morning, you know? So there was a few times for sure, and it was great because growing up, I told this story I think last week, where in elementary school, both of my PE coaches, one of them was an OU fan, went to OU, graduated there. One of them was a UT fan, graduated from there. And they were super tight with my family and my parents, so they would get me Christmas gifts every year. Mm. And the same year, they each got me an OU and a Texas jersey. Ooh. Never wore either of them. And they don't know that to this day because I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Well, you also had, you were growing up watching Andy Dalton. And so you could at least identify with, hey, one of me over here doing the TCU thing. That could be me one
day. I've got like signed footballs from Dalton and LT and stuff. So like I saw the good stuff when I was growing up. I didn't, you know, I kind of disassociated after the national championship game. We don't talk about that around here, but other than that, that was one of the most fun games I've seen in a really long time. I know Woolchuck was probably clenching the cheeks a little bit there towards the end of the game, but overall,
beginning of the game too. That's just kind of the day he
cheek clencher. That's my thing. I don't think that the targeting call though is what lost the game for Arizona State.
Like, no, not
to
at
me,
all.
That's the most foolish take of anything.
Not
was
at
it
all.
Targeting? Yes. I hate the targeting rule in college football. Ooh. We need to get rid of the ejection. The ejection thing's ridiculous. If it happens twice, then fine. The whole thing, the player now is suspended for the first half of the next game. That should not be a thing either. So I'm glad they didn't call it targeting because Michael Taft didn't deserve to be ejected.
Yeah.
By the letter of the law, was it targeting 100%? Now, does Arizona State make a field goal? They can't kick. So do they still go on to win the game? I don't know. Arizona State has a fourth down opportunity to win it. They didn't. They failed. Right. That game goes to overtime. They had many more chances to win that game. The Sun Devils weren't able to do it. So that did not win or lose the game for Texas or Arizona State. I do think it should have been called by the letter of the law it's targeting, but overall, they need to tweak that rule in college football. It's probably my most hated rule in all sports.
Yeah, it's disappointing, you know, but not as disappointing as you having hatred for the Texas program, Alec. That stunned me about 5 minutes ago.
And you jumped off the TCU bandwagon?
Mm. I didn't jump off the bandwagon. I just disassociated a little bit. Like, I'm still a fan. I still root for them, and I still outwardly express that. And trust me, a dude named Reggie Adatula reminds me of that almost weekly. But it was like a natural thing. I was kind of forced into it because my grandma worked for TCU for like 20 years. So, you know, you kind of find yourself.
Rocket.
Yeah, you find yourself being forced into those situations, which I'm not mad about. But
I mean, it's okay to support your university, you know, but I think a fair amount of respect for the flagship college football program in the state, considering our state pride, is appropriate. You know,
I don't know. It's really just the fandom that has gotten to me. Like, I apologize in advance, Woolchuck. A lot of my friends from high school went to UT, so I have to.
I don't know why you're apologizing to me. I have to.
Woolchuck's not a
friend. Out of this show, for the state.
Yeah, that's where
outside A&M, it is hard to root for A&M.
Out of this show, 2 to 7 weekdays here, I associate you closest to the University of Texas, just like I do Bobby on the morning show for obvious reasons. I'm surprised he didn't rip
Brian's
my head off.
Brian's got a son at Texas. He's probably closer than I am.
He's got he's got a Horns hat on right now.
He's paying tuition. He's giving money to the university.
Paid for the spring semester already. Yeah.
Man, that's got
to
be
paying enough for the bottles to throw on the field next time they play Georgia, actually.
And actually a brilliant move. SEC football, they're fitting right into doing that kind of stuff.
Look at that.
Appreciate the Texas fans figuring that out.
Did we all collectively feel really good, though, for the kicker, the Auburn fella?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, not that he's walking around with any sort of confidence today, or will he in the next game?
Sure.
But the fact that that game didn't end with Texas losing, that dude is still, you know, able to sleep to some extent.
He just needs another speech from Coach Stark.
Dude. You know,
obviously the
best
speech
ever. I think that was his demise, dude.
Or was it the ASU girls walking in front of him? That went trending on Twitter. The ASU equipment managers, if you will, walking right in front of Burt while he's warming up. Right before the biggest kick of the season, and he misses.
Good distraction on their part,
good
though.
Yeah.
It felt like a skit.
They're bringing some talent.
He's got to be the youngest Burt in the world.
I think they were working the sidelines.
Yeah.
They were ball girls.
I mean, he's lining up to do a kick, and they walk right in front of him.
Wow, we've become so progressive in college football. They're not just ball boys anymore.
Yeah. Nope, they were ball girls, two of them.
When you're named after a Muppet, I expect nothing less than pure comedy in that end-of-game situation. Me, personally, if I'm getting the best like motivational speech TED Talk of my life before the biggest kick of my life, I'm going to make the kick. Me, personally. But that's just me. I expect that Ezekiel Elliott getting released comes to no surprise to you fellas whatsoever.
It's an embarrassment. You know, I think this goes under just don't bring your legends back because things can get awkward.
Sure.
You know, they're washed up, obviously. It might be tempting for one reason or another. Maybe he's the quarterback's best friend, or he can sell jerseys, or you need a running back really bad. But it's just it's a bad deal all around.
Does Zeke get on another team? Because they said they released him for
his playoffs. He cleared waivers.
He cleared waivers. Do you think anybody? No.
Yeah, those words are just another example of some sort of obligation they feel because I guess he's a legend.
I had to listen to Chief going about a 3-minute rant the other day about. Well, they've got to have some deal obviously worked out here. I mean,
it was all speculation. The news breaks during the show, so we're trying to figure out why is this happening now? And Broadus' sources couldn't come up with anything better than what I had, so I ran with it.
Broadus' source thinks that that Zeke was in danger of being inactive this week again and was going to just go ahead and bail anyway. Mm. That's what Broadus' sources say.
Yeah, because he hasn't been signed yet by any. I mean, maybe if like David Montgomery has a setback, like the Lions could use some help.
Yeah, we were trying to piece together what would make sense.
The Chargers, you know,
but it's embarrassing to make it seem like this is Zeke, for Zeke and his agent to request this because we want to go get on a playoff contender.
I think it's all an act.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's an act.
I am with you.
Same. I think that's an act. And I always say this because I do believe that he probably was going to be inactive again.
And that's more embarrassing than saying, please release me because I want to go get on a playoff contender and then no playoff contenders want you. That feels more embarrassing.
He doesn't want to have to go through. He doesn't want to have to go through that whole thing he went through with Atlanta. You know, the whole thing where he has
Was he missing meetings again? Was that a perpetual problem?
Yeah, I would bet. Yeah.
That was all still happening.
Yeah. Probably kind of
that would be my speculation I'm running with. Yeah. They're like,
that'd be Dawson's sources.
Well, we could leave him on the team and just have nobody know. And then somebody's ticked off enough. No, I'm not doing that for him. Yep. Let's release him.
Yep.
What do we got coming up on the program today, boys?
Pure Gold, as always, thanks for asking, Medford. It is it's a triple guest Thursday, actually, here. Calvin Watkins coming up at 3:20. Eric Kendrick's show at 4:20 or 4:40. You know, just depends on when Big Mike lets him out.
Yeah.
And then at 5 o'clock, we're going to have Stephen Jones.
Okay, there you go. Roll home.
Final interview of the year.
Yeah, look at that. It feels weird that this NFL season is already coming to a close. No playoffs, though. Huh. Well, roll home with the G-Bag Nation. We have been the KNC Masterpiece. Blake, thank you on short notice for showing up, even though you are under the weather.
See you tonight, Blake.
Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow.
How about that?
Live from Buffalo Wild Wings in Burleson, Jerry Jones, 10:30, right here on 105.3 The Fan.